singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly. Blackbird fly. Into the line of a dark black. This moment to arise. You are
good afternoon.
Waiting.
You are listening to CFRO 102.7 FM. Waiting. Welcome to Animal Voices, the program that discusses environmental and animal issues in the hope of increasing compassion and kindness towards all creatures. This show is produced through the cooperative efforts of three local societies, Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection, Earth Save Canada, and the Vancouver Humane Society. Views expressed on the program are not necessarily of the three cooperating societies. My name is Marge Adams, and in the control room is John Pranger, one of our co-hosts, who is looking after the switches today. In the studio with me is a good friend of Animal Voices, Anthony Marr, a well-known local environmental and animal activist. Many of our listeners know Anthony from his public speaking and years of work campaigning on behalf of numerous species, including the tiger, the grizzly bear, seal, and dolphin. His work has taken him to many parts of the world. A few days ago, he returned from Oregon, and shortly before that, from Japan. He's a real traveling man. Welcome home, Anthony. Very nice to have you back. Now, Anthony, maybe we could start by having you tell us about your work in Japan.
I spent a little bit more than a month there. There were two missions. One is called Way of Japanese.
Hang on, folks. I think we got a little technical trouble here. Okay. Just a minute. Your mic's not working, Anthony, so just hang on a sec. We'll just try to fix that.
I'm sorry. I guess the mic that Anthony's using is not working.
So we'll just play a little music and be right back.
I'm sorry, we had an interruption there because we have a hum on one of our microphones. But now we're going back to Anthony Marr, who is going to tell us about the work he has been doing in Japan.
I went there in late October, and I came back in about the last week of November. I spent about 10 days in the western tip of Japan in a city called Shimonoseki. And then we moved over to the Taiji Shingu area. And the former was in regards to the Japanese whaling. And the latter is about the dolphin capture and slaughter industries.
I see. And now the Japanese whaling, I know that is something that's scorned by all the environmentalists I know. What's the purpose of it? Can you tell us?
Well, you know, after I've spent so much attention on Japanese whaling and been to Japan twice, I still do not quite understand why the Japanese are steadfastly pursuing whaling. Perhaps it is due to industrial and economic pressure. It is a pretty big industry there. All the ships are high-tech and very big ships, very spick and span, state-of-the-art ships, and maybe they just had to keep going to keep that industry alive. But there are many, many negative ramifications to it.
Are they all privately owned ships, or the government of Japan?
I'm not quite sure about that either. I think government probably has a hand to that. All the ships have this big S on the funnels, and I have been doing some digging in regards to what that S stands for, and so far I haven't come up with any definite answers, but I'll keep on digging on it.
A claim is made that that these whales that are being killed, I don't know about all, but some at any rate, are for research purposes.
So-called research, quote-unquote. In fact, in the mothership, which is a big, big ship, it's about, I would say, 300 or 400 feet anyway, at least, if not longer. It's got a black hull, and on the side of the hull, in big, fat block letters, it says research on both sides. And that is one of the worst uses of that word, other than animal experimentation in labs and vivisection, for the use of the word research. It is absolutely bogus. It is just an excuse for them to go and exploiting this loophole offered by the IWC, International Whaling Commission, that nations can go whaling using the word research.
And do they ever publish any research reports?
I've been looking and haven't seen it. I haven't seen any such reports. They say that they check 100 points to each whale that they hold aboard. But I would wager that among these 100 points is not included the factor whether the meat of these whales contain high levels of toxins.
And do you think the main purpose is for food?
The main purpose, I believe, is for food, because it is, they've been saying that, whaling and eating whale meat, and as well as dolphin meat, is a long-standing tradition lasting several hundred years. And that is the sort of sob story for the rest of the world, saying that, this is our culture and we should maintain it and carry on with it. Otherwise, lots of people are going to be unemployed and so on and so forth, and the Japanese economy may be affected. However, several hundred years ago, whale meat and dolphin meat are not loaded with these toxins that they are today. So it is a brand new thing, and they should absolutely look at it again very seriously and discontinue it as the only viable option.
Now, are these whales and dolphins used by the general public with the knowledge that these toxins are highly concentrated in those animals?
I'm not sure that the Japanese people know about it. They just live their life as if it's the same thing that's been going on for hundreds of years, and they just cruise along. But I believe once news get to them in regards to the high levels of mercury and dioxins and PCB exist in these meats, and that the Japanese people, fully knowing the extent of these contaminations, are still pushing these products on the people based upon economics, I think they have reasons to be extremely concerned and very upset about their own governments.
These toxins are especially damaging, I think, to children, aren't they?
Yeah, most of these are, children obviously, and fetuses too, are very subject to heavy health damages, particularly in regards to mercury, it would heavily impact on their neurological functions, their brain development, and the whole retinue of behavioral problems, including deficit attention deficit, learning disorders, speech impediment, motor skill impediment, the whole range of it, and it is a sort of a lifelong damage. They won't recover from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the government doesn't do anything to inform the public, I guess, to any great extent that you're aware of. Huh?
They do not inform the public at all, and that's why I'm currently waging this media as well as educational campaign in regards to these factors, so that sooner or later we hope this information will reach the general public in Japan, and then they will have to make a decision for themselves regarding whether they should subject their own children to this poisoning perpetrated by their own government, or whether they should even go further and do something with their own governments.
Now, you talked to me privately about a school lunch program.
Yes, Japan is right now reopening the institutionalizing of including whale meat and maybe some disguised whale meat in the form of dolphin meat in the school lunch program. And this is an absolutely unforgivable and inexcusable thing that they're doing, because they have known, and or they should know for years, that these food items are fully are loaded with an excessive amount of these highly damaging contaminants, particularly to children, and they're targeting their own children, particularly in the elementary school lunch programs.
And now, where do the dolphins get their toxins?
Well, just like the orca and the dolphins and porpoises in our own BC waters and Washington waters, these animals are sitting on the top of the food chain, and any such contaminants from the lower benthic levels all the way up to them are progressively concentrated from level to level until we reach the top. And when we reach the top, and this doesn't just refer to the marine mammals, we're talking about terrestrial mammals as well, like the bald eagle. You know, they're just loaded because they feed upon fish. So so basically, these contaminants start from the plankton, and then the fish eat the plankton, and then the high-level marine and terrestrial predators eat the fish and the deer and so on, and they you know, they sooner or later would get it, and they would get it at a very, very high level.
So that the fish are also contaminated, but maybe not to as high a degree as the animals at the higher level of the...
That's correct, yeah. The higher you go on the food chain, the more concentrated these toxins are going to be in their tissues.
But fish is very important in the Japanese diet, so that I suppose whichever fish they're eating, they're going to be suffering from these toxins.
At a lower level of concentration. Mm-hmm. Let me just give you some examples. I'm not quite sure as to the concentration of these toxins in fish tissue, but in dolphin and whales, particularly those so-called harvested in Japanese and northern latitude waters closer to industrial discharges, and even those that they killed in the Antarctic, thinking that, you know, that they're so far from industrial sources, the tissues will be lower in these toxins. But it is true, except it is just slightly lower. It's certainly higher than the maximum allowable concentration set by the Japanese government themselves. For example, mercury. Well, first of all, mercury is a very, very potent toxin attacking the nervous system of humans, particularly young children and fetuses. That means if pregnant women ingest these products, they would pass it on to the fetuses, and then their fetuses would grow up retarded mentally. Mm-hmm. For example, and the dioxins are the most potent carcinogen known to science. There's nothing more powerful in terms of being a carcinogen than dioxins, and PCBs are not far behind. In fact, for example, Canadian beluga whales and the St. Lawrence Seaway are so loaded with PCB that they're carcasses are considered to be toxic waste. Those people handling it don't even can't even touch it with the bare hands. In Japan, for example, mercury, the maximum allowable concentration for mercury in food tissues is 0.4 parts per million. 0.4 parts per million. And if you just randomly analyze dolphin meat samples purchased around Japan, you will likely come across an average mercury concentration of up to about 50 parts per million, when the maximum allowable concentration set by the Japanese government is 0.4.
My heavens.
In other words, it is about 20 or 30 or 40 times the allowable concentration. So, in other words, the Japanese government is violating its own law, because it set the law by saying that you will not ingest any food, or you should not sell any food with mercury concentration higher than 0.4 parts per million, and they're regularly selling these meats and whale meat too, and also pushing it on the school children when the concentration of mercury, at least mercury, not sure, and methyl mercury is very potent as well, maximum allowable concentration is 0.3 parts per million, and methyl mercury regularly exceeds 30 parts per million. So the Japanese government is violating its own law, first of all, and secondly, they're knowingly, if not deliberately, but I believe it is also deliberately poisoning its own people, particularly children.
And all in the interest of what? Industry? Is that where most of the pollution
comes
from?
I believe so. Industry, culture, tradition, their pride, economics.
So they just an unwillingness to accept the reality of the situation.
Well, for whatever reason, what they're doing is inexcusable. For example, Norway, another whaling nation, Norway, warns its own people, particularly pregnant mothers and young children, against ingesting any whale meat of any quantity. And Japan is doing exactly the opposite. In the Faroe Islands, which is a Danish protectorate, which does an annual, so-called annual grind, G-R-I-N-D, in which they kill hundreds of pilot whales that they herd into the bay. And in fact, it is such a festivity that even tourists are invited to go into the water with some kind of weapon and kill a whale. And they did an exhaustive study on the effect of mercury on the people of the Faroe Islands. They have three groups of people. The first group is pregnant women, and they have these pregnant women divided into two subgroups, those that ingested whale meat and those that did not ingest whale meat when they were pregnant. And then the second group is children 7 years old from these pregnant women 7 years hence. And they, of course, have two subgroups, one belonging to the mothers that did not ingest whale meat, and the other one belonging to mothers that did ingest whale meat. And the third group are children 14 years old. That means 7 years later, same group and same subdivision. And they found that both the children of 7 years old and 14 years old of the mothers who did not ingest whale meat are healthy, and those of the mothers that ingested whale meat have all these neurological problems.
Where was the studying done again?
In the Faroe Islands.
Oh, yes.
And one further point is that the children of seven years old and the children of 14 years old have the same problems. In other words, the damage is done permanent. It's permanent. It is irreversible. So the Faroe Islands have done this study, and Japan should pay attention to it. And,
absolutely.
But Japan is either they don't know or they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And to be charitable to them, I'll say that they don't know about it. But then, as soon as we let them know about it, they should change.
I imagine they have been let know about it by some active groups in Japan, or
I guess they themselves should know about it, because Japanese scientists themselves, particularly a Dr. Endo, have done exhaustive studies of the concentrations of mercury, dioxins, and PCBs in whale and dolphin meat, as well as health effects of these contaminants on people, particularly children. and this is widely published, in the year, as early as 2000, another Japanese scientist made a speech during the International Whaling Commission annual convention in regards to the concentrations of these toxins in whale and dolphin meat, as well as the health effects, and the Japanese government, of course, would know about it. So first of all, it is incomprehensible that they would still push these products on their own people, and secondly, how to stop them doing that.
Yes, okay, there's the question. I'm sure that there are must be a lot of concerned activists in Japan. Am I right?
No.
No, they just don't exist?
Well, there are, you know, Japan has how many millions of people, you know, almost 200 million people, and they, you know, I mean, I've been to Japan twice, and I have only come across one group in Tokyo, and they're very mild. They're just a street corner demo, so-called activists, and they don't go anything further than that. They certainly don't do any direct action type campaigns. And both of these trips that I went to Japan for are direct action, and I could not get any Japanese activists to go to help me. So
you were working alone.
Pretty well. Uh-huh. Pretty well alone. There was one English activist who was one of the members of that group in Tokyo, and he helped me to the extent of indirect action. But as soon as I moved on to the direct action aspect or phase of that operation, he just packed up and left.
Were you able to carry on to any extent with the direct action yourself?
With great difficulty, partly because of the language barrier. Almost nobody in Japan speaks English. It is strange, but it is true that, you know, even at the international airport in Tokyo, when you go to a car rental place as a foreign tourist and try to rent a car, you have a big problem communicating.
Really?
And that is unbelievable because, I mean, you know, if Japan has any tourism bureau or department in the government, they're certainly not doing a good job at all. They just you know, all the cars, the newer rental cars, they have GPS systems, and foreign tourists can't get around without a GPS system. But all the GPS machines are in Japanese, none in English.
This is a location finder, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you know, you just punch in your destination, and they'll just guide you there by means of a moving map. And it's a good thing that I can read Chinese, and I can decipher most of the Japanese writings, because they present place names mostly in Chinese characters, and I could read that. But any strict English speaking activist would not be able to use
it. I see. So it seems like a pretty difficult situation with this poison that the Japanese people are consuming. They must surely be concerned about their own health. I think everybody is.
Yeah, well, I've talked to a woman called Elizabeth Oliver, who is an English woman who started a place called Animal Refuge Kansai. Kansai is near Osaka. And she's been there 30 years, and I have great respect for her. And so we sat down and talked and sort of strategized. And the conclusion was that, you know, what she was, she basically said that the Japanese people are not there yet in regards to animal rights and caring for anything subhuman or non-human. But when it comes to humans, and particularly Japanese humans, they should be very concerned. And they should take up the banner. But having been to Japan twice already, I also see that the Japanese people are very conditioned to be yes people, and particularly to a government. They wouldn't dare to say anything against the government. They wouldn't dare to do anything against the government.
They don't question authority, as we've been told to do so often.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And even media is controlled by the government. In other words, if you have a media story that is controversial, the media wouldn't touch it. That is strange, because, you know, Western media thrive on controversy, whereas in Japan they don't dare to touch it. And if you write a piece of an article that is even slightly controversial, you have to present it to the Japanese government to okay at first.
Really?
And to edit it. So when it comes to, you know, getting an article out to criticize the Japanese government, saying that it is deliberately poisoning its own people, I don't think it's get too far. And I don't think that too many journalists would like to touch that subject. So what
be very difficult to get published, in other words.
In Japan, yes. So, but, you know, not all is lost because external pressure is more potent. So if I could generate a global media coverage of this particular subject, it will reach Japan, and if the Japanese journalists see that you know, there are articles everywhere in, you know, in North America and in the USA and Canada and the UK and Europe talking about this, then they will certainly try to catch up, and the Japanese government has nowhere to hide. So once that reaches the Japanese people, I'll just have to leave it with them and see what they can do with it, you know.
Now we're going to take a short break, Anthony, and then we'll get back and hear some more about your plans.
Okay.
I'm sure you're not going to stop trying. you're
oh,
a
no,
doer.
I'm just cranking up again on a new round of.
Good for you. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 FM. This is Animal Voices Radio Show, and our guest today is Anthony Marr, a local animal activist and environmentalist. Now, John, could we have a piece of music?
Del Toltén, tras tupido matorral, con donairoso vaivén, lava la india su chamal. Se endereza y se despeja su amplia frente, y con razón lanza al aire su onda que a manera de canción. Winca tregua, winca pillo, me robaron mi potrillo, mi rucahuaca y ternero. Me robaron mi potrillo, mi rucahuaca y ternero. Es su dolor que rebos. Ni el lipo ni el laimulque, no hay alca, no hay anchagual, dice la india y refriega su negro y burdo sayal. Winca tregua, winca pillo, me quitaron mi potrillo. Me robaron mi potrillo, mi rucahuaca y ternero.
Thank you for that, John. Now we're back to Anthony Marr in our interview about the whales in Japan and the problems with toxins in the meat that people are eating, very actively eating, I'll say. Now, Anthony, you're going to tell us something about the education program that you're organizing, or you've already launched probably, into this matter.
Before I get into that, I want to say a few more things about the whale meat industry and the dolphin meat industry in Japan. There is a... if you go into all major cities, you will find whale meat in supermarkets, and there's one particular supermarket chain which is called Seiyu. SEIYU, which has 400 and some odd outlets throughout Japan. And it has been surveyed, and I think over 95% of them carry whale meat, and that is one thing. Another thing is that we all know about Walmart in North America. Walmart is a major corporate partner of CU, to the extent that they share directors and they share policies. And so, in other words, Walmart is very much part and parcel of the whale meat industry on a global basis. And and that's one thing. Another thing is, so one thing that I wanted to do is to also wage an anti-Walmart campaign, if only about this whale meat industry business. Walmart has a lot of money sunk in the CU as well, and vice versa.
You would want to make that connection known to the public in North America.
Absolutely. And Walmart has been nicknamed already as Whalemart. And so that is something that I'll be launching next year. Something that I'm in the process of organizing and we'll be launching next year as well is also an educational program geared to the children of North America, both Canada and the U.S. And basically what I want to do is to go into the schools, go into as many schools as possible in Canada and the U.S., and that would, of course, involve an intensive speaking tour again. That would be my sixth one. And I'll be pairing up each school with a Japanese school. And after my presentation, I will, on the spot, have a letter-writing session involving the school children, so that the school children in Canada and the States will write to the school children in Japan, each school paired up with a sister school in Japan, and to warn them against eating whale and dolphin meat in the lunch programs.
Now, that's a very interesting program. I'm wondering what cooperation you'll get from the school boards in Japan. Maybe they don't use that term, but you'd have to get permission to team up, I guess.
I don't think I would need any permission from them at all. I would just go to the internet and do a search in Japanese schools, and then pair them up with Canadian and American schools, and just get the school kids over here to write letters to the students in these schools.
Would you hope
any permission from them?
No, you don't think so. What about responding? Would you hope they would respond? The children would respond to the senders of the letters.
I hope that they would, but that is not not of vital importance. I'm sure that after they have received these letters, they will go home and tell their parents about it, and they themselves hopefully will not eat whale meat in the lunch program. And if there is no demand for it, then that program hopefully will fail.
That's very interesting.
And their parents hopefully will get some moral outrage into them. That the government is directly poisoning their own children.
Now,
Anthony, the quota has been doubled, hasn't it, this year to 935 whales, which includes 10 fin whales for the first time, I believe. Is demand being artificially cranked up, do you think? Or
excuse me, John is just asking a question. Anthony can't hear it. But the demand for the catch for whales has been increased to over 900 whales.
935 is double.
That's right. And that's the next thing I want to talk about is Japanese whaling. Japan has two whaling seasons. One is between November and March, and that would be in the Antarctic. And their previous quota have been 440 minke whales, which are about 10 tons each. And but this year they have they're driving for, and they are also going to be taking whales of other species. Both are endangered. One is the fin whale, which is about 70 tons, and the other one is our darling, the humpback whale. And both of these species are endangered, and they're taking, so they are they've got certain quotas for them as well this year. And they are also doubling their quota of the minke whale from 440 to almost 900.
The International Whaling Commission doesn't have any power to speak of, I suppose, in controlling this, huh?
they've got zero power in terms of enforcing their own rules. Well, they can set rules.
But the
whaling nations don't have to obey those rules. There's no enforcement at all, and that's why organizations like Sea Shepherd and so on, they're going out there as enforcers, since there is no international enforcement agencies of force.
Now, Japan and Norway are the main whale killers, aren't they? Those
Japan,
two countries.
Norway and the Faroes,
and
Faroe Islands.
I see. What would the quotas be of these other two places?
I'm afraid I can't tell you that.
Yeah. Would it be as high, do you think, as the Japanese?
No, not quite as high.
No.
And that is only one season. The next, the second season is from April to I don't know where when, but when the whaling fleet return from the Arctic, they would just unload those ships and then they would just go out again immediately to the northern Pacific waters, particularly near Japan, to kill another 200 to 300 whales, including the sei whale, the Brudese whale, and a sperm whale.
And all
of these are endangered.
They are all endangered. Mm-hmm. Is there any non-endangered whale?
I believe the minke whale is considered not endangered.
But
at the whale that at the rate that they're killing them, they soon will be.
Mm-hmm. Now, John had a question.
Yeah, maybe Anthony could put on his headphones for a minute so he can hear.
I'll have to repeat.
Okay.
It.
Well, the fleet is also deep in Australian waters, but the Australians. They're deep in Australian waters, but the Australian government won't prosecute because they say the Japanese government doesn't recognize these boundaries. So.
Now,
there you are.
Apparently, they are whaling in Australian waters, and the Australian government won't enforce the International Whaling Commission guidelines because the Japanese don't recognize them.
I'm very disappointed by the Australian government, and so are the Australians themselves. They've got jurisdictions over the Antarctic whale sanctuary, and they're not protecting the whales. They're weak-kneed and they're very cowardly, and I believe that the only reason is economics. That they're afraid that that Japan may sanction Australian goods.
I see.
It's all the same thing. It's all.
And there's been a ramming already, an incident with the boat rammed. I suppose we can expect trouble in the future too.
John suggesting there has been a ramming of a boat already, and we probably can expect more controversy in the future on the seas.
I haven't heard of that yet, but I know that Greenpeace was there, and now Sea Shepherd is there as well, and quite likely it would be Sea Shepherd who would be doing the ramming. And
no,
if that was what happened,
around.
It probably happened today.
Mm-hmm.
No, on the 20th of December. One of the vessel that was taking in the whales to the mother ship did turn against the Greenpeace boat and tried to ram it. It was just a glancing off, but nevertheless, it was a demonstration of ill will.
Apparently, it was an attempt by the whaling ship to ram the Sea Shepherd.
The Greenpeace ship?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then
wow.
They did sort of glance it. They didn't.
The Esperanza.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I also know that they use water cannons and other things to repel the people in the zodiacs and so on. So
they are very courageous people, aren't they, who are willing to put their lives on the line for the whales.
Well, sometimes when it comes to doing something that you that must be done, you know, mm-hmm. you've got to set aside your own personal concerns for the moment.
Yeah, they've done it often with some success. I don't suppose they've got the success they were hoping for in these cases, but nevertheless, it certainly has made an impact and informed the general public a great deal more.
That's correct. A lot of these direct action actions are sort of media oriented, so that the general public get to know about it. But the general public has to do something about it because all these people out there doing on the front line, they are in danger and. Endangering their lives, and these campaigns are very expensive. And if in spite of all these things that they do, the general public don't respond, and keep on concentrating on human things, we're just dooming our own planet. And sooner or later, we've got to pay for it. So it's either pay now or pay later.
Yes, I think we're already paying, you know, with climate change and, well, the weather of this year, that's all part of our own doing, I would say.
Oh,
with the
entire
hurricanes and the floods and the avalanches, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's focus a little bit on our local issues regarding the whales and the dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on the aquarium?
Well, the aquarium just recently purchased two dolphins from Japan. From Japan, I have to stress that. And the general public, once again, is either don't know about what it means or don't care. What it means, just in case they don't know, is that Japan has this dolphin slaughter industry that kills about 22,000 dolphins. 22,000 dolphins, that's a huge... huge number. Let's say, you know, each dolphin, say 3 meters long, it would be, you know, it would form a huge line, long line along the highway, for dead dolphins. And, you know, even killing one dolphin is totally objectionable, and it would appall us if a dolphin is killed in front of us.
You don't mean 3 meters long, do you?
3 meters long, yeah.
That would be like 9 feet.
9 feet.
That's very long. I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, dolphins are. It's about 9 feet long.
Wow, yeah. 1.5 the height of a tall man.
That's correct,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the dolphin slaughter industry is actually driven by the dolphin capture industry, because each dolphin killed for meat is only worth about $500. Each dolphin captured for entertainment and captivity are worth tens of thousands of dollars, maybe $20,000, $30,000. Versus $500. So,
mm-hmm.
If the dolphin capture industry is not in existence, it would not be economical to for even these dolphin killers to go and kill dolphins.
I see.
So that capture industry, of course, has to be sustained by demand from aquariums and aquariums who have no scruples of buying dolphins for entertainment purposes. Now, the Vancouver Aquarium sounds good by saying that, you know, that they're not going to not purchasing dolphins caught from the wild, but only dolphins bred in captivity. But anybody who can think around a corner will wonder, you know, where do their mothers come from? Where do their grandmothers come from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there's a market for dolphins bred in captivity, you know, what Japan will do is to just capture more female dolphins and breed them to have lots and lots of babies to sell. So
and the purchasers know what they're doing too, I'm sure.
They absolutely do, and they, you know, aquariums in China, in Hong Kong, in Asia particularly, they're very dolphin entertainment prone. North American aquariums have had enough criticism to sort of try to stay quiet about that and also try to say very loudly that they're not going to accept dolphins caught in the wild. But, you know, as I mentioned, where do they come from? Where do their mothers come from?
Yes, and the surveillance over these things is not very strict, is it? There's not adequate records available for people who are interested in following the line of where these, in fact, dolphins did come from. It's not easy, I understand.
Well, even though these records may exist, you're not going to get into it. They will not let you have the information. It is not
private.
Doesn't belong to the public domain. It belongs to the industry.
Right.
And so basically what happens is that, you know, whenever there was a pot of dolphins seen offshore, the fishing boats will go and herd them into a bay, and then the dolphin capturers will come in first and wait until the water and pick and choose a few young females, unblemished, for both breeding and for performance purposes. Some young males too, but mostly young females, and a lot of these young females already have a baby with them. And they would just haul these young mothers out of the water and leaving the babies in the water, and then maybe half a dozen out of maybe 40 or 50 would be hauled out of the water for that purpose, you know, mm-hmm. for sale to aquariums and to swim with dolphin programs, even those swim with dolphin programs in Florida, and. So, and then after that, the other dolphins that are older, with scratches on the bodies, you know, small babies, they're just killed. Even babies are killed.
And that's the hideous slaughter begins once the others are taken out, I suppose, is beating to death and all
that.
That's
right. Different places kill dolphins in different ways as well. For example, in the island of Iki, what they do is that they would haul all the dolphins up onto the beach and lance them and cut them when they're thrashing about on the sand. In Futo, what they do is that they would haul the dolphins up by their tails with cranes, and then dump them onto the back of a pickup truck, and a pickup truck would drive those dolphins in a short distance to a butchery and dump them onto a concrete floor, and then they would slice the throats of the dolphins from side to side. That would take them about six minutes to die. In Taiji, they would herd the dolphins into a shallow bay, and then they would kill them in the water. And since dolphins move around in the water, where they cut the dolphins are highly imprecise. I've seen photos of dolphins with their abdomens cut open and the innards coming out, and the dolphins are still alive. And you know, that would take even longer for them to die than to have their throats cut.
Awful.
And then they would, whether they're still alive or not, they would be hauled onto skiffs with hooks, and then just dumped into the skiffs, and the skiffs would move them over to a butchery, and then but everything is covered by big tarps. Even the shallow bay, the entire bay, the land end of the bay is covered by big sheets of blue tarp, and the dolphins are herded underneath the tarp to be killed.
You've actually been there on the beaches, haven't you, and seen this happening?
Well, I was there to experiment on a technique to keep the dolphins from even entering the bay. So when I was there using that technique, I've kept the dolphins out of the bay. So I haven't actually personally seen these dolphins, thank goodness, being slaughtered in front of my eyes. But I've certainly seen quite a few, you know, videos and uh-huh. lots of photos of dolphins being killed.
How are you trying to keep them out of the bay?
I'm using a sort of a technique that can be described as interspecies communication, to warn the dolphins that the bay is not some place that they should come into.
And was it to some degree successful?
As I said, when I was there, the dolphins didn't come in.
They just didn't come in?
They just didn't come
Wonderful.
In.
Wonderful. Oh, what a...
But there was only one me, and, we need more people to go over there.
I don't suppose you've got a friendly reception from the people involved in this slaughter, though.
Well, it's highly covert, so hopefully they don't know what I was there for, but they certainly knew that I was a foreigner mm-hmm. Doing something that that is beyond their understanding. I've been interrogated about 4 or 5 times by Japanese authorities. I've become a veteran of being interrogated by Japanese authorities.
Oh, and you successfully made your exit each time, so I guess that you know the proper techniques, Anthony.
Well, since I'm Chinese, you know, we are supposed to be inscrutable anyway.
I see. Now, I think we'll take a short break once again. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, and you're listening to Animal Voices. Our guest is Anthony Marr.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for that. That was a nice interlude, John. Now we're back with Anthony Marr. And Anthony's going to tell us about something about the whale and the kind of creature he is. Could you tell us a little bit about the whale? And
whale? Well, the whales originated from a small land mammal about, I would say, 20 million years ago, and come about 16 million years ago. They have adopted themselves to an aquatic and marine way of life and have changed their bodies to suit them. They have very, very large brains. A dolphin, for example, a bottlenose dolphin, you know, something looking like flipper. It may look like a fish, and the Japanese people still consider it to be fish. And they have very, very large brains. They're a human brain, for example, an adult human brain measures about 1,400 cubic centimeters, whereas an adult bottlenose dolphin brain measures about 1,600-1,700 cc's, which is about 300 cc's larger than human brain, which measures about 1,400 cc's. And it is much more convoluted, and human brains are convoluted brain. It's more intelligent than a less convoluted brain. Human brains have three lobes, and a dolphin brains have four lobes. Dolphins have a very, very sophisticated social structure. They have they're very caring animals. They you know, and the unscrupulous humans, they take advantage of the dolphin's good nature. For example, dolphins would not leave one of their wounded members behind. So in order to keep a whole pod of dolphins, these fishermen wound one or two of these dolphins, and drive these dolphins into the bay, and then the other pods will go into the bay along with that wounded dolphin. It is also said that for beaching of whales, when one or two that are not feeling well but go onto the beach, they would the other members would follow them as well. And furthermore, dolphins have been said to be dolphins, as far as their own records are concerned, are entirely beneficial and benevolent to humans. They've been known to save humans from drowning. They've been known to save humans from shark attacks. The dolphins themselves are very afraid of sharks. When they see a shark approaching, they actually freak out, and they try to sort of hurt their young ones away from the sharks. But it's been documented that when a human being is about to be attacked by a shark, the dolphins sometimes would attack the shark to save the human by ramming the shark.
Imagine.
And,
yeah.
And so, you know, we're just being very unethical to
take over the dolphin's habitat, aren't we? And we are polluting it so badly.
Well, we're taking over the habitat of all wild animals and wild plants.
Yes.
Not just dolphins and whales, but the great whales have been pretty well chopped down to, you know, maybe 1% of the previous population, just the last 1%.
Right.
And the Japanese are still trying to target at 1%, and you know, and trying to reopen whaling of endangered whale species like the humpback and the sperm whale and the fin whales. But we Canadians ought to take a look at ourselves as well. We are an international illegal whaler as well, because internationally, according to CITES as well as the International Whaling Commission. CITES stands for Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species. No endangered species is allowed to be hurt, not allowed to be killed, not allowed to be traded. And Canada is still killing a highly endangered whale species called the Eastern Arctic bowhead whale, on account of they're putting native rights above the rights to survive of this species.
And how many are allowed to be killed?
One or two a year, maybe three.
I see.
One or two a year anyway, and there are only about 200 left. 200. And they're still killing one or two for political reasons, for political correctness. And the native people ought to bear some of the blame, because they themselves are the ones who want to carry on with that tradition.
Yes.
So.
And right on the coast here, there's an opportunity for Aboriginal people to kill a whale.
Yeah, that's right. Earlier on, I was talking about the Inuits people living in the eastern Arctic, which is, you know, Greenland, Hudson's Bay, those areas. on the west coast, it is the migratory route of the Atlantic grey whale. The Pacific grey whale, which migrates past the Pacific Northwest coast. In fact, the western coast of North America, they calve in the Baja Peninsula, and then they would migrate all the way up the coast, past BC, past California, Oregon, Washington, BC, Alaska, and then the Bering Seas, and curve over to Russia, mm-hmm. where the Russian natives also kill them. And the Russian natives, the Chukotka, they use a very horrible method. They use AK-47s to kill them, and it is said that they would need to pump about one or two or 3,000 rounds into a whale to kill it.
What do they kill them for? What purpose?
Supposedly meat, but grey whale meat is not supposed to be very appetizing. A lot of whale meat is being fed to fur farms, to foxes and minks in fur farms, pet food. The Makah native band, as well as the Nuchanov native band on the west coast here and the west coast of Washington State, have been clamoring for killing, reopening grey whale hunting. And in fact, they killed one in 1999, and they're right now once again cranking up the rallying cry to have these whales, this grey whale hunting reopened. 70 years ago, they killed it down to the last few, and they stopped the whale, stopped that whaling. But now they want to reopen it.
The direct killing is a big problem, but I would guess pollution is even a worse problem.
Pollution is always a problem.
And that's
pollution.
Another man-made...
I mean, we haven't even begun to ask what the health effects mercury and dioxins in PCB would have on the whales and dolphins themselves. We just... You know, we can go only as far as the health effects on humans.
Yes.
I mean, what about the whales themselves? What about the eagles? The eagles are, you know, having a problem because the eggshells have become very thin and So, but what's happening to the whales? What's happening to the dolphins? The babies? Do they have any nervous system disorders? Do they have any learning disabilities? Do they have any speech impediment? We don't know.
I would certainly expect that they would, with all that you've told us.
But before I close, I would like to ask the general public and the listeners to see if they would like to volunteer for these projects. We certainly need help. Go to hope-care.org. That's www.hope-care.org, and contact me.
Thank you very much for being with us today, Anthony. You've done a great job of telling us about these beleaguered animals, and we appreciate you taking time, especially at such a busy time of year. I know everybody seems to be rushing.
No problem. I have dropped out from the Christmas activities. But anyway, thank you for inviting me again.
Oh, you're so welcome. And we will be having you back, I've no doubt.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening. We at Animal Voices would like to wish you a Merry Christmas. We will be hearing from us again next week on Animal Voices at 102.7 FM. Good afternoon.